Ladies and gentlemen, the Mencken Watch continues, or resumes. You know that one of the most hallowed quotes of a distinguished cynic in American history, hallowed at least in show business circles, is H.L. Mencken's oft-quoted observation, quote, "No one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public," unquote. It's quoted and unquoted so often in Hollywood and New York. Hello, New York. Because it sort of stands as a de facto default defense of whatever crap you want to put on the air or in the theaters. Because, hey, quote, "No one ever went broke." Okay. So let's check it out. Because the empirical approach is really the American way of doing things, isn't it? Dateline Hollywood. Fox won the battle by putting its controversial game show, The Chamber, on the air before ABC's similarly themed The Chair, but it may have lost the war. The Fox network decided this week to pull The Chamber from its primetime schedule in favor of sitcom repeats and movies. Three remaining episodes will likely air this spring, although outside the sweeps period, so it won't matter. What's ironic about the early yanking is Fox had played an extreme game of cat and mouse with ABC to ensure that the Dick Clark-produced Chamber, hey, can I tell you who's on the Chamber? No one you've ever heard of, bowed 3 days before ABC's Chair earlier this year, actually in January. Both shows force contestants to answer questions under duress. Both are mired in litigation. Fox is suing ABC. The producers of The Chair are suing Fox. The Chair had its first two airings on Sundays, where viewers either mistook it for The Simpsons, since it was airing in The Simpsons time slot, or followed The Simpsons immediately, thereby hanging on to some of The Simpsons audience. After its first airing on a non-Sunday, on a Friday, pulling a smaller rating than what Dark Angel had been averaging, Fox pulled the plug. So, is Mencken right or wrong? Well, before you decide, maybe you better stay tuned to more of Hello, Welcome to the Show.
Thank you.
from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. And by the way, we will defend that title, ladies and gentlemen. I know there are a lot of challengers to it this wintertime. From Santa Monica, California, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. It's been going on for a long time, but we're welcoming back listeners in New York City who've been gone. Where have you guys been? I know what you've been up to. We've been reading the papers. But welcome back, New York City, WNYE 91.5 for the first time. And, God, who's counting? Anyway, more about whether Mencken was right. It was a controversial milestone in the annals of psychology, a case study of how a scientist lost control of his experiment and the human suffering that ensued. In a simulated prison at Stanford University, student prisoners and guards descended into their roles so quickly and thoroughly that the experiment had to be canceled to halt the guards' escalating abuse of those within their charge. That was 30 years ago. Today, it's becoming entertainment. This March, viewers of the BBC in Britain will discover The Experiment, a new reality television program that will place two groups of volunteers inside a mock prison, label them guards and prisoners, and record whatever happens next, ostensibly in the name of science. I like that kind of science. It's the kind of science that decided to bury nuclear waste in Yucca Valley. But more about that anon. Meantime, this is the kind of progress I want to see more of in show business, in the business, especially right now, because I got a movie to promote. A bidding war between rival talk shows in Britain has sparked a fee frenzy in which the world's wealthiest stars are being paid up to $150,000 a shot to plug their own products on primetime television. Hey, a fraction of that, and I'm there to plug my movie. Britney Spears is among the pays. Program producers say the competition between shows fueled by publicists, this nasty publicists, has resulted in A-list personalities receiving enormous sums simply to appear and promote their new album, book, or play. This is raising concerns that television companies are overextending themselves to pay for the most sought-after guests. Britney Spears is said to have been paid up to $150,000 to promote her single, Overprotected, on the Frank Skinner Show on commercial television in Britain last week after a bidding war between rival shows that was seen as ITV, the commercial channel's response to the BBC, which is known to have spent a similar sum meeting the demands of J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez, American singer, who appeared on two BBC shows 2 months ago. Her costs included redecorating the 9 dressing rooms that she demanded at the BBC with white muslin and white flowers, in addition to furnishing them with sofas flown in from America. The BBC also helped to cover the cost of 5-star hotel accommodation and first-class flights for her and her 90-person entourage. You need more Pepsi there, J-Lo? Okay, fine. In addition, Lopez, who was promoting her new album, was paid an undisclosed cash fee by the two TV shows involved. Competition in the talk show market in Britain has increased in recent months. One show, Johnny Vaughan Tonight, pays fees of $5,000 for a 10-minute appearance by a well-known personality. You know, a lot of people have heard of me, Johnny. Paul Ross, the program's producer, admitted the show was under pressure to compete. He said there are a growing number of chat shows, and so the competition is very strong. Fees in the business are already astronomical, and it's going to get worse, i.e., from the talent perspective, better. Spears and Lopez now head the list of the most sought-after guests. Producers refuse to confirm any details of fees. A publicist for Liza Minnelli told the London Telegraph the singer and actress have been offered $50,000 to appear on an unnamed British talk show. Joan Collins was recently paid $20,000. To appear on the relaunch of a morning show, giving her an opportunity to promote her play, Love Letters, which was opening at the Old Vic. Andrew Lloyd Webber is understood to have earned $10,000 for an appearance on a talk show just over a year ago. And politicians are at the very bottom of the pecking order. Appearance fees are not always only in the form of a cash stipend. Liza Minnelli was offered 2 Concorde tickets, a week in a suite at the Lanesborough Hotel in London, which costs up to $6,000 a night, in addition to $15,000 in spending money. Diana Ross was offered a similar deal by an Australian talk show host who works in England, Clive James, who also offered dinner at the Ivy and other leading London restaurants for every night she was in town. This lucrative package failed to attract Ross, who turned down the offer. Another ruse by publicists, this is from a newspaper, of course, who are increasingly in control of the talk show circuit, is to insist that a show must book a certain number of their unknown clients in return for booking with a famous star. Tim Rice, former partner of Andrew Lloyd Webber, condemns the practice, said he would not take money to promote his own work. Quote, I don't think anyone who takes $4,000 to appear can be very interesting, he said. What about $5,000, babe? I can be very interesting for five. I could be compelling for $5,000. Director Michael Winner said he can expect to receive $3,000 or $4,000 for a talk show appearance and $300 or $400 for a soundbite on a news program. The older I get, the less I need it, he said. His fortune is estimated at $20 to $25 million. He added, having said that, I do now charge for appearances. Other people do, so I think, why not? Also in the why not file, Noel Bush. Now, this is a story I'm going to bet cash money you haven't heard elsewhere. Even though it's perfectly well-sourced, this is from a Tallahassee newspaper, one of several reports on this subject that have reached this desk, but I bet you haven't heard it. Noel Bush, daughter of Governor Jeb Bush of Florida, told Tallahassee police after a September 2000 car crash that she'd taken prescription medication before the wreck. A police department spokesman said this week she showed no signs of drug intoxication, and since there were no injuries in the crash, she wasn't tested for impairment. She was arrested by the Tallahassee Police Department this week on charges she tried to fake a prescription for Xanax at a pharmacy. Governor Bush's office has declined to comment on the September 2000 crash. It was the third of Noel Bush's 4 car crashes in Leon County over the past 2 years. Forget about the president's daughters. This girl has crashed her car 4 times in 2 years. Can we get a recount, Catherine Harris? Sorry, 4 times in 2 years. Bush was freaking out, said 38-year-old Sandra Morrow, a former Tallahassee bank employee who was sideswiped by Bush. She was freaking out. She was like, look at my car, look at my car. Then she came up in my face like she was going to hit me. She was belligerent on top of me. A man who witnessed the crash and asked not to be named agreed this week that Bush was wigging out and seemed near hysterics. Said a sheriff's deputy, she said she'd been up all night or something to that effect, but it's not against the law to be confused or overtired. Not if you're the governor's daughter, ladies and gentlemen. And finally, at the top of the week's news, some relatives of September 11th victims are angry that a Georgia company is selling commemorative medallions made with steel from the World Trade Center. This is ghoulish, said the mother of a firefighter who was killed. This is so inappropriate, I'm disgusted, she said. The medallions are forged from an alloy, 25% of which is recycled Trade Center steel. They're offered at collectible stores for $29.95. Well, at least it's not $30.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak. I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. and the cares that hung around me through the weeks seemed to vanish like a gambler's lucky streak. When we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I'd love to climb a mountain and to reach the highest peak, but it doesn't thrill me half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I'd love to go out fishing in a river or a creek, but I don't enjoy it half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Dance with me, I want my arm about you. The charm about you will carry me through to heaven. Ooh, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. When we're out together dancing cheek to cheek, cheek to cheek, cheek to cheek. When we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
A letter to you on a cassette, 'cause we don't write anymore. Gotta make it up quickly. There's people asleep on the second floor. There's no aphrodisiac like loneliness. Truth, beauty, and a picture of you. You'll be walking your dog in a few hours. I'll be asleep in my brother's house. You're a thousand miles away with food between your teeth. Come up for summer, I've got a place near the beach. There's room for your dog. There's no aphrodisiac like loneliness. Truth, beauty, and a picture of you. There's no aphrodisiac like loneliness. Truth, beauty, and a picture of you. There's no aphrodisiac like loneliness. Youth, truth, beauty, fame, boredom, and a bottle of pills. There's no aphrodisiac like loneliness. Shade, sexy.
know what motivated the station in New York to start broadcasting this program all of a sudden, except maybe the appearance of that wonderful article in the Louisville Courier Journal last week. Thank you for that. But bigger frogs to fry. A mystery virus that is. We've been wondering what's been happening to the frogs in this country. You know about that. Mysterious die-off of a lot of different frog species. Well, it's been happening in Britain, too. A mystery virus that has ravaged the frog population of Britain may have entered the country inside imported goldfish, according to scientists. Naturalists have reported hundreds of cases of dying frogs over the past year suffering from a disease, yuck, that causes their paws and feet to drop off. Tom Langton, director of the Frog Life Trust, there has to be one, said the epidemic is worse than myxomatosis, the plague that destroyed the rabbit population 40 years ago. Hey, Australia, there's a way to kill off the rabbits. Now they tell us. He said, an investigation of more than 62,000 dead frogs by scientists at the Institute of Zoology in London and the Frog Life Trust has concluded the culprit is an unknown viral infection. 20 years ago, goldfish were imported from Italy. Now they mostly come from Israel and the United States, where bullfrogs are often blasted with shotgun pellets to stop them competing for fish food. Bites of bullfrog could be eaten by a goldfish that is netted and flown off for quick distribution to British garden centers. The American bullfrogs may have been infected with the same virus. There is a worldwide decline in frog numbers, along with other species of amphibians, and a range of causes have been suggested. So this is not a clue to what's happening in this country. This is just we've, through the goldfish vector, and speaking of goldfish vectors, Greta Van Susteren is returning to television this week on Fox News. She jumped from CNN, and I was tipped off by a friend at Fox. Now it's all over the papers. Greta's had a facelift. Mama's got a squeeze box, but Greta's got a facelift. So you know that Greta's happier, really, than Mama, when you stop to think about it. She told the Washington Post she decided on a whim to have the indentations removed from under her eyes. That's all. But what about the lips and the mouth and the thing? No mention of that. The Washington Post says it must have been a witness protection program eye job because she didn't look anything like Greta Van Susteren in the promos Fox was running over the weekend. She says of the promos, quote, "My face is swollen. I regret to tell you it's gone back to normal, only I look a little younger." That's not what other observers noticed. On ABC's daytime hen chat show, The View, Barbara Meredith Vieira, Meredith Starr, Joy, and Lisa Ling, thank you, Tom, were all amazed. "Look at this. If this is an eye job, who's her doctor? That's amazing. That can't be. She looks like a completely different person. She looks good. I don't know anyone that has an eye job that starts at the nose and works its way up." Greta insists to the New York Daily News it wasn't a big deal. "My doctor told me he did so little that when the swelling goes down, I might not even know that I had anything done," says the journalist. She doesn't know whether she'll cop to it, the surgery on the air. She wanted the facial work while at CNN, according to sources, but her bosses balked. "There was a sense of enthusiasm at CNN that just isn't there anymore," she says. I guess enthusiasm for facelifts would be. Didn't they used to always hire the... I mean, it was like a big thing when they put Greta on the air anyway. Because she was not a Ted Turner kind of babe. Oh, well. "Secrecy is an indefensible excuse." It's an interesting quote to hear right about now, as things are going the way they're going. But this is from Australia, and it refers to atomic tests in Australia in the 1950s. Retired Air Force officer Norman Geschke has called for an independent inquiry into atomic tests in Australia during the 50s. He played a key role in them. He believes a deliberate cover-up had been mounted to hide the negligence and irresponsibility that led to defense staff unnecessarily suffering radiation exposure. He piloted one of 11 heavy bombers used to monitor the spread of radiation across central Australia. It's just rabbits, don't worry about it. After the atomic blasts at Emu Field in October 1953. Two of his five-man crew have since died of cancer. He retired in 1994 after 13 years, also suffers from skin cancer. Secrecy is an indefensible excuse, except, you know, when it's not. Meantime, of course, all sorts of controversy about the United States proposing putting nuclear waste in Yucca Mountain, Nevada. Apparently, the science is not all that good. The Energy Department will ask permission to dispose of nuclear waste at Yucca Mountain, Nevada, before it has finished designing the waste repository. It hopes to begin burying the waste long before it knows how to seal the tunnels, according to Energy Department officials testifying before an independent science advisory panel. Members of the panel said there were enormous gaps in what the Energy Department knew about Yucca Mountain, a volcanic structure about 100 miles south of Vegas, and about the high-tech canisters it was proposing to seal the waste in, just for thousands of years. Don't worry about it. Officials said the research on how well the mountain and the waste containers would isolate the radioactive materials would continue for as long as the repository was open, which could be 300 years. But then they closed the repository and expect the stuff to stay okay there for 10,000 years, which is the half-life of some of the material in the nuclear waste. As I say, you know, 10,000 years, don't worry about it. But as was observed in this broadcast a few weeks ago, Nevada officials who are vociferously and politically objecting to the placing of nuclear waste at Yucca Mountain would, I think, be better advised to take advantage of Nevada's natural ability to turn any potential disaster right around.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're invited to forget everything you ever knew about Las Vegas-style resort entertainment. You're invited to the grand opening of the biggest thing to hit the Nevada desert since topless Starbucks. Welcome to Hades.
Hi, everybody. I'm Wayne Newton, and I've taken a short drive south from Vegas to Yucca Mountain's new resort entertainment complex that's half-lives ahead of the competition. It's the theme concept to end all theme concepts, because, you know, while we all want to live in heaven, we'd sure like to visit Hades.
I'm Danny Satenstein. When I first had the idea for a Vegas-style resort experience based on hell, I knew Yucca Mountain would be the perfect location. Halfway between Las Vegas and East Bumtuck, Hades would be a place unto itself, away from all distractions like competition. A place where good never felt so bad, and evil never was so much fun.
Two mammoth showrooms are at the center of Hades. In the Millennium Theater, the Cirque du Soleil captures your heart 24 hours a day. In the Devil's Isotope showroom, major stars like Cher, Wayne Newton, and the cast of Rent share the stage with the Jimmy Hitler dancers. And they've always got Vegas throat.
Here's a part that's a kick for the Indian. The ride into the depths of Hades, where you'll actually be in shirt sleeve comfort, but the ambient radiation makes it feel like 120 degrees on a molecular level. You know, everybody comes back from Nevada with a tan. You're going to come back with a glow.
Hades had to bring a new concept to the action that's at the heart of the Nevada resort experience, so how's this? A casino where there are no chips. You're playing with little plastic slices of your very own soul. Take it from me, it's a thrill. Plus, there's fine dining at Lucifer's, where all the stakes are charred. And the magnificent Satan's Folly Golf Course, the 17 most beautiful holes in Nevada.
And Hades is no energy hog in the desert. All the electricity for this fabulous resort is created by the natural radiation leakage. Your travel agent has all the information on the vacation destination of damnation. Next time you're planning your Nevada getaway, aim down. See you in Hades.
Carrot Tops in the Flaming Laugh Pit through February 9th.
Bangs above your eyes, your hair hangs. Blew my mind, your royal flyness, I dig your bangs. Bangs to drape across your forehead, to swing come coded angles as you incline your head. Once with a girl I fell in love some time ago, now she had been.
This is LeShow, and we're back on in New York City, as I mentioned at the top of the broadcast, for the first time in 4 years, something like that. So much water has gone under the bridge, comedically speaking. And ladies and gentlemen, only in the New York City metropolitan area, only people who are listening to WNYE right now are eligible for this stunningly inane offer. I did this with people in Philadelphia whose local station there had just forgotten to air the broadcast a few times during October. Nothing was going on. And now I'm repeating it for people listening in New York City, because they haven't been able to access this broadcast radiophonically. If you want to hear what you missed during the months after 9/11 through the end of the year, they're collected on a couple of CDs called Everything Has Changed. Just send a request to LeMail, LEMAIL, at interworld.net. I'm only going to make this offer today. Never again. And it's free. That's why I'm drawn a big bright line around it. If you're in New York City or environs and want to hear what you missed here on LeShow during that special time, LeMail, LEMAIL, at interworld.net. Request it right now, and you'll get it for free. Only don't tell anybody. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States had a little speech this week. Man, did they build it up. It's you know, when the State of the Union address occurs the same week as the Super Bowl, it's the hype just blends. It just mixes so that you really don't know whether they're talking about the Democrats or the Rams. Because so much time is wasted. Now, I want to say this, too. I made a couple of these observations on this subject on Bill Moyers' Friday night show on PBS. They edited out this paragraph where I talked about the engorgement of the State of the Union experience till it is swollen to the length of an Olympiad, and blamed it, of course, on television. Because television needs to fill all that time, so why not have guys talking about the State of the Union before it happens and then after it happens? And so it looks like I'm blaming the State of the Union. I was fingering television, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, television hates to be fingered. Who doesn't? Anyway, George W. Bush makes the speech. Talks about Iran, Iraq, and North Korea as the axis of evil. You know that by now. Doesn't mention Enron, of course, at all. Now, another political figure did more than mention Enron. I don't know if you saw this, but it is true. The Reverend Jesse Jackson, after unsuccessfully trying a couple weeks ago to meet with Enron, he didn't found the company. The company existed before he came along. But the Enron visionary, Kenneth Lay, who was a chairman and has just recently quit, just before he testifies before the one of the many committees investigating Enron. Anyway, this past week, Jesse Jackson finally succeeded in having that meeting with Kenneth Lay in Houston, the same week that Kenneth Lay's wife, Tom,
Went away.
That's right. You want to say it again?
Linda Lay.
Thank you, Tom. Linda Lay appeared on NBC to say they're broke. They got nothing left but their house. She didn't specify which of these 12 houses she meant, but anyway, Jesse Jackson met with Ken Lay, and upon emerging from the meeting, Jackson compared Kenneth Lay to the biblical figure Job.
Yeah, come right on in, Reverend Jackson. Thanks, Ken. You can call me Jesse.
All right, you can call me Ken.
Well, I just did. What a beautiful living room.
Well, now, it's really a great room.
All right, but beautiful or great, it pleases the eye and it passes the pie.
Pardon me?
Sometimes it's rhyming things kind of on an automatic pilot.
Well, let's set a spell. What do you say?
Yeah. What is this, soap brocade on this occasional chair?
Yeah, it is. Linda found it. It's 14th century Chinese. Very rare.
Mm-hmm. Rarer than a politician you weren't supporting.
I suppose so. Of course, we're selling the chair and the matching sofa here.
eBay?
No, my sister's buying them. It's just easier and cleaner that way. All she does is send a pre-canceled check to a Bahamian Transshipping affiliate. Our non-bankrupt shell company owns half of them.
No tax on the proceeds and an export incentive deduction on the full value of the furniture?
That's right. You know, for man of the cloth, you understand a thing or two about the business world.
You know, God does not withhold from him whom he does not also reward. Each of us has our time of testing, followed by a season of harvest.
Uh-huh.
This is your time of testing, Ken. Your season of harvest will come.
Well, I hope so. Our broker in Aspen says every potential buyer we've had up there has tried to seriously lowball us. I mean, you know, just insulting offers.
Uh-huh.
Low $2 million. Uh-huh. That's a testing.
That is a testing.
Yes.
But, Ken, can we talk about your people?
Well, Linda, you haven't met. She's been very strong about this, even though she knows that St. Bart's is out of the picture until at least after the hearings.
Uh-huh.
And yet to look at her, you wouldn't imagine the hurt. Of course, I know it's there.
Yeah, I meant your employees, the black and brown people whose sweat and dedication fertilize the soil within which an Enron could flower, if only for the briefest of springs.
Well, to tell you the truth, Reverend, and I'm not proud to say it, but actually we were a pretty white company. Now, of course, we were definitely planning to do a whole diversity thing within the next couple of quarters before, you know, Clancy lowered the boom there.
Then what a redemption of that moral debt to let a representative of the excluded have a seat at the bankruptcy table so that while the mighty will have their portion, there'll also be a portion for Operation Push so that those who never even got a chance to be employees who lost their life savings could be ministered to. And so that a pastoring like this can continue to be possible, because in the depths of his suffering, mm-hmm. you know, Job continued to believe. Mm-hmm. I think like Job, Ken, mm-hmm. you have to make a demonstration of the continuation of your
believation.
That's right.
I have to say, Jesse, I was kind of wondering why we of all people would be getting a visit from you. I mean, of course, everybody in the firm used to get MLK Day off, except for the Asia traders. Uh-huh. But still, you know, I guess I'm sort of at the opposite end of a lot of your spectrum.
Ken, you were trading electricity futures.
Well,
you know that you couldn't have electricity without the positive and the negative charges. God works through opposites. Uh-huh. In a circuit, what passes from the negative to the positive pole might be a few microvolts. In a personal relationship like ours, that circuit would be complete. When a financial arrangement reached in an hour of mutual need is executed in a long-form agreement.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Honey, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Linda, you know Reverend Jackson.
Miss Pleasure, this is a lay.
I beg your pardon?
I said, Miss Lay, this is a pleasure.
Yeah, I thought I misheard you, too. What is it, honey?
Have you seen our gold dust anywhere? Corazon wanted to mix some into my nail polish remover.
I believe we're all out. It's the last thing I heard from Household Resources.
Okay, then. Nice to meet you, Reverend.
The lay was all mine, Miss Pleasant.
See, that's eating up her insides, but she will never let on. Mm-hmm. That's just...
Mr. Lay, there are many demands upon the open heart. Gary Winnick of Global Crossing mm-hmm. has a similar situation to yours, and he's already committed to a seat at the bankruptcy table for the voiceless ones. And he's invited me to his daughter's ballet recital. So,
Mr. Jackson, I have people that I have to answer to.
Like who?
Like my son. He's in seminary now, and you've never heard a holier-than-thou attitude till you've heard one from a kid in seminary. Jesus, you know, talk about a kid who gets every break in business. You know, we give him the twigs and a lighter fluid. He still can't make a fire.
I've heard a few of those attitudes in my time, Ken. Hell, I've copped a few of them, but these are new times.
Yeah.
America wants to see its leaders cooperate for the common good, not just act like a common hood.
See, that's why I always liked G.W. You give him a head start, he figures out pretty damn quick how to work those pedals, you know?
Ken, in some religious traditions, the shepherd can offer absolution. All I can offer is the hand of brotherhood and some very good coverage opportunities using the Black History Month window.
Mm.
Can we witness a coming together here? Can we plant the seeds of your harvest time?
Can I call my legal people?
Ken, the first two letters of law are half of the deal.
What?
L.A. from law and A.L. in deal.
All right, well, we can talk about L.A. law while they're on the way over here. And I'll tell you, they're not happy campers either. They're virtually working pro bono on this thing. I mean, these guys are billing me less than $200 an hour. That's just a friendship thing.
Uh-huh.
Now, of course, they're not billing me. They're actually invoicing our off-the-books Canadian partnership.
Right.
They bill in American dollars to get paid in Canadian dollars.
Sure.
The difference is what we can share with you.
All right.
Hello, Carlene.
A medicine man I met said, don't get yourself in a sweat. When things look gray, just shrug and say, it must have been something I ate. So don't get get yourself in a snit, he said. Tuck your tantrums into your kit instead. It's disarming to be charming, quoth the medicine man, whom all agree it's plain to see nobody could be wiser than. So if your temper's getting the top hand, all you gotta do is just stop and pass that beast pipe and bury the hatchet like the Choctaws, Chickasaws, Chattahoochees, Chippewas do. If you're feeling mad as a wet hen, mad as you can possibly get, then pass that beast pipe and bury that tomahawk like those Chichimex, Cherokees, Chapultepex do. Don't be cranky, try to use a little restraint. Fold that hanky and wipe off all of that war paint. And if you find yourself in a fury, be your own judge and your own jury. Pass that peace pipe and bury that hatchet like the Choctaws, Chickasaws, Chattahoochees, Chippewas do.
Discover it's best to pass that peace pipe and bury that hatchet like the Chochos, Changos, Chattanooga, Chicharos do. Oh, even in colonial days, use ceremonial ways to pass that peace pipe and bury that tomahawk like those Chikudamas, Chappachis, and Chicopees do.
Pull your ears in, try to use a little control. When all clears in, you'll be top man on the totem pole. And if you wanna be an alright guy, not a long-faced blues in the night guy, write that apology and dispatch it. When you quarrel, it's grand to patch it. Pass that peace pipe and bear the hatchet like the Choctaws, Chickasaws, Chattahoochees, Chippewas.
And those Chichimex, Cherokees, Chapultepecs.
And those Chickudamees, Chepechecs, and Chichipees.
Chochos, Changos,
Chattanoogas, Chicharos do.
And that said with the greatest of respect, of course, ladies and gentlemen, as you know. And now, just as it always has been, it's time for me to read the trades for you. Premise being, just to remind our New York listeners, stories about the advertising industry from inside the industry tell us more than we want to know about ourselves. And that's a good thing. Let's start with this, Ad Age, the Bible of the advertising industry. The White House anti-drug advertising program broke two new anti-terror ads on the Super Bowl in the single biggest event government advertising buy in United States history. Media buying sources said the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy paid over $1.6 million per spot. The drug office will get free matching spots from Fox and other high-profile events. Oh, so it's our taxpayer money going to Fox. Good. The drug office used the Super Bowl positioning to break a new campaign, the first major effort created since the start of the drug office advertising program in 1997 that goes outside the normal channels of the Partnership of a Drug-Free America. The two 30-second spots produced by award-winning iconoclastic British director Tony Kaye suggest illegal drug sale profits may help fuel terrorism. They do not argue for the legalization of said drugs. Big surprise there. The drug office declined to comment on why British director Tony Kaye is producing such a prominent campaign from the American government. Attempts to reach Mr. Kaye's agent were unsuccessful. And now to youth and the problem of youth. Olympic game viewership ratings have been sliding for the last decade, dragged down largely by the absence of free-spending young adults. Younger people don't find the games as relevant or compelling as their baby boomer parents do. Seeking to boost interest among young adults, NBC is carrying its Olympic promotions online, into movie theaters, onto leading college campuses, and into trendy nightclubs. Hey, what's your sign? And the U.S. Olympic Committee has pledged to work with the network and Olympic marketing partners to become the lightning rod that recharges interest in the Olympics among younger Americans. At the same time, Olympic caretakers are also concerned that the next generation of corporate executives, awash in a sea of attractive marketing partnerships, will be less interested in forging costly Olympic sponsorship deals. This is from the dog trainer in Los Angeles. To keep today's advertisers and sponsors happy, the Olympics must restore television ratings. Between the 92 Summer Games in Barcelona and the 2000 Summer Games in Sydney, viewership among men fell by 55% in the 18 to 24 range. Baby boomers clearly remember the Olympics as this singular special event, says Alan Wurzel, NBC's president of research and media development. But observers say NBC and its Olympic partners haven't educated younger adults on what makes the Olympics so special. I think it's the Dick Ebersol factor. It's on a network that won't have any pro sports in a year. That's what makes it so special. The generational challenges arise at a time when corporate sponsors are being wooed by executives at such competing attractions as the Academy Awards and the Super Bowl. Olympic caretakers are also struggling to keep the games relevant to young Americans who are embracing extreme sports. Baby boomers who controlled the networks were raised to view athletics as pure sport, not entertainment, says Rick Burton, executive director of the Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon. But Generation Y, Burton says, wants its sports prepared with a liberal sprinkling of music, entertainment, and fashion to create a tasty lifestyle stew. Isn't that why the XFL worked? The Olympics and NBC are taking a page from the NFL's playbook and jamming as many music and lifestyle events as possible into broadcasts from Salt Lake City. And on a related topic, the news networks are trying to get younger people to watch the news. CNN began collaborating with MTV last month to produce sassier news segments. CBS has started producing news segments with MTV and VH1. They generate revenue for the news division of CBS and may attract younger viewers to the product. As the war in Afghanistan grows less intense, the public's hunger for straight old-fashioned network news and 24-hour cable news programming slackens. According to the New York Times, the Buffy crowd, which had briefly tuned in, has gone back to its old viewing habits. And the networks are now chasing the Buffy crowd, hiring younger reporters and anchors. Executives at CBS and other networks are all too aware of the risks attendant on skewing young by pandering too overtly. ABC was pilloried by critics and in the ratings when it assigned Leonardo DiCaprio to interview Bill Clinton on the environment. But VH1 has already added CNN-style news crawls to its morning broadcast with items like, quote, Mariah Carey's new film premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. Hey, kids, tune in, won't you? It's the message blaring from all quarters, apparently, when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature. Kids, don't hack this. Ladies and gentlemen, in case you don't know about it, a lot of Enron memorabilia going for big prices on eBay. T-shirts, three dozen copies of Enron's Code of Ethics book, an etched glass Enron Energy Service Award given to employees that went above and beyond the call of duty. All going for ridiculous prices. Well, any price would be ridiculous at this point. Enron hard hats range from $26 to $101. A copy of the company's risk management manual goes for $1,025. Wow. And we learned through these listings, there's a mouse pad featuring the Enron company slogan, Ask Why. You can't do better than that. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to put the cap on this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan. Around the world through the Armed Forces Network on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.7415 megahertz. All over North America on XM Satellite Radio. And around the world on your computer whenever you want it at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. It's really easier to hear it than not hear it with all these options we're making available, don't you think? And it would be just like having an Enron mouse pad in your home. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much, The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.